rather imagine that everyone here has probably heard of something that's come to be called the blame game. The blame game. And what is that? And of course, what that consists of is someone has made a mistake, done something very wrong, but he or she doesn't want to accept the responsibility for it, and so they seek to find a way to blame somebody else for it. Little children are able to learn this game very early in life. And a father one time told me, he said, every time something happens around my house, I'm convinced there's someone in our home named Not Me, because he said, every time something happens and I ask the kids who did it, it's not me, not me, not me. He said, if I ever get my hands on Not Me, he's in big trouble. But that's blaming somebody else, of course. Look at what you made me do. Have you ever heard a little child say that? Maybe they fall down. Look what you made me do. Well, again, that's trying to transfer the blame for what they have done to somebody else. Politicians are experts at the blame game. It's somebody else's fault, always. Criminals very often offer that as the excuse that they give it. And this, it really is an excuse. Somebody has defined an excuse as the skin of a reason stuffed with a lie. And that's a pretty good way to describe an excuse. But blaming somebody else for what we are really, in fact, responsible for. I suspect, however, that all of us probably have played the blame game at some time or another. Reminds me of a story I heard one time about a man who had been chosen to be the CEO of a big corporation. And so he was taking the previous CEO's position, his place, and the man who was leaving office came to him and said, now look, this job, I can tell you from my own experience, this is a difficult job. And very likely somewhere along the line you'll make a mistake. And he said, so what I've done, I'm going to give you advantage of my experience. Said, in the desk that I used to use, and now it's your desk, I've placed 3 envelopes in the drawer of that desk, and I've numbered them 1, 2, 3. And so he said, the first time you find that you really made a big mess up and mistake, go open envelope number 1 and do what it says. The guy said, well, okay. He's probably thinking, I don't think I'll need them. But sure enough, it wasn't very long until a big blunder. And he remembered. And so he went and got envelope number 1, and he opened it up, and it said, blame me. Okay, so he told everybody, he said, my predecessor's fault. You know, he started the policies that led to this. Not my fault, it's his fault. And everybody said, okay, that makes sense. Well, again, you can kind of see where this is going. He made another big mistake. And so go open envelope number 2. And he opened envelope number 2, and it said, blame the board of directors. So again, he's got somebody else to shift the blame to. Played the blame game. Everybody, it's the board of directors' fault. It's not my fault. And that worked again. Well, the third time eventually came. And so now he's going to see, what is it the third envelope has? He goes to the desk, opens up envelope number 3, and it says, prepare 3 envelopes. So I guess passing the buck only works for just so long. But life is filled with things like that, that people have come to expect it. That you're going to try to somehow divert the fault and the blame to somebody else. Well, of course, this started in the very beginning of human history. Let's go back now to the Garden of Eden. You remember the story there? Where God created man and then created woman. He placed them in this Garden of Eden, this beautiful paradise, and gave them permission to eat of all of the trees in the garden except for that one tree, that tree of knowledge of good and evil. And God specifically, clearly told them, you shall not eat of that tree. In the day that you eat thereof, you'll surely die. And here comes the serpent, the tempter. And he convinces Eve that this is desirable to eat. It looks good to your eyes. In fact, it's designed to make you wise. It'll make you like God. And those 3 temptations led Eve to eat the fruit and then give to her husband Adam, and he ate of it. And then we come to chapter 3, and we find now God confronting Adam and Eve with this first sin that man has ever committed. Notice here in chapter 3, it begins in verse 9, God called to the man and said to him, where are you? And Adam said, I heard the sound of thee in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, and so I hid myself. One of the things they came to realize as a result of eating this tree was that they, in fact, were not clothed as they felt they should be. And so he said, I hid myself from you. Well, then God said, who told you that you were naked? Have you eaten of the tree of which I commanded you not to eat? Of course, God knew they had, but he's asking Adam to confess the sin he had committed. You remember what Adam said? And Adam said, the woman whom thou gavest to be with me, she gave me from the tree, and I ate. That's a double blame game, isn't it? Well, obviously he's blaming Eve as the one who's responsible for giving it to him. But you see implicit there also, he said, it's the woman that you gave me. So I would say that Adam is probably doubling up on his blame game. He's blaming God for giving him the person who was responsible for him disobeying God. So he's blaming Eve. But the story's not over. You remember then his attention now is diverted to Eve? And verse 13, then the Lord God said to the woman, what is this that you have done? And the woman said, the serpent deceived me, and I ate. And so she blamed the serpent. Well, there's some element of truth in that, but it didn't remove, in either case of Adam or Eve, their personal responsibility. And so God, of course, cast them out of the garden. Well, do you remember the one talent man in Jesus' parable? Here was the man who had five talents and gained five more. Another man had two and gained two more. The man who had the one talent given to him took it and buried it in the ground and dug it up when the master came back and presented, here you have what is yours. And do you remember how there, when it was discovered that he had not done as the others and been industrious and hardworking, he had failed to produce any profit. Here was the explanation he gave. It's an excuse. But I think it's also a casting of blame. He says, Master, I knew that you are a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering when you had not scattered seed. And I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours. In other words, what he's saying is, Master, it's your fault. You intimidated me. You frightened me into inaction. And so it's really not, don't blame me. It's really you being such a demanding and austere master. Clearly, I think in this, we can see the point of the parable is that we can't blame God for our failure to do what God expects us to do. There are many examples in Scripture. Let me just give you one more. You remember Pontius Pilate, as he's pictured for us there in Matthew 27? He had tried repeatedly to convince the people he could not find any basis for convicting Jesus, find no fault in him. And they kept demanding, crucify him, crucify him. And here he was in this very precarious position politically. He didn't want to incur their rage and their anger against him. And yet he was forced, it seemed to him, to do something he knew wasn't the right thing to do. And here in verse 24 and 25, we read, Pilate saw that he was accomplishing nothing, that is, in trying to dissuade the people. But when a riot was starting, he took water and washed his hands in front of the multitude, saying, I am innocent of this man's blood. See to that yourselves. And what he's saying is, will you agree? Will you admit it's not my fault? Don't blame me. And that's when, of course, they said, yes, we'll take the responsibility. His blood be upon us and our children. So again, here was a man who was culpable. Pilate had the right as the governor to set either Jesus or Barabbas free. He sent a man he knew to be innocent to be scourged him first and then sent him to be crucified. And he tried to pass the blame off to the people. And so it's gone throughout human history, blaming others for what our own behavior, and it continues today. I can give you a host of examples, but one that I recently heard about that I thought was a classic. This happened down in Texas at Galveston Bay. This woman had been out drinking all night long. Her blood alcohol level was 0.17, which in Texas is almost double the legal limit. And in that condition, she backed her car into Galveston Bay. And she was so inebriated that she was unable to unhook the seatbelt and get out, and she drowned. Well, that's tragic, to be sure. But her parents sued Honda. And they sued Honda for making a seatbelt that worked so well that their drunken daughter couldn't get out of it underwater. And as I said, there's a host of such frivolous examples like that of putting the blame somewhere, and occasionally that works in a courtroom. So people often play the blame game, and now we're going to think about cases where it really has very serious spiritual consequences. Can you think of some examples? Well, one of them, we still hear it even today. The devil made me do it. Well, that's what Eve said. That was her line. It was a serpent that caused me to do it. And so people very often want to make that excuse. Some of you may remember Flip Wilson, how he sort of made that an ongoing joke whenever somebody would do something. Well, the devil made me do it. And people laughed at that, and we thought that was kind of silly. But the fact is, people may not always articulate it and say it that way, but they sometimes want to say, well, you know, it just, it made me do it. That the devil, the tempter, the powerful one, and he is indeed powerful, he's ferocious. But you remember what James said in James 4:7? Very simple statement. But it really forces us to face the reality here. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. That's God's promise to us. We're going to kind of take a look later on at this same basic idea of view from another standpoint. But here we cannot say, I was helpless. The devil just forced me to do it. Well, sometimes people, and this is, we could probably make a whole lesson out of this one. How many times have we seen through the years children who are not living as they ought to live? In fact, I have an article in my files back there. The title of the article is Blaming Godly Parents for Ungodly Children. And that happens. And sometimes it's expressed all sorts of ways. The sort of the typical way it often comes across is, well, you know, they were just so strict with me. And so harsh, and they had so many rules, and I grew up with all that, and finally I just couldn't help it anymore. And so I had to just go out here and throw off all restraint. Well, the logic of that is immediately obviously wrong. Mom and Daddy made me eat every day, and so I'm just gonna quit eating. They made me bathe, they made me sleep, they gone and on and on. The personal responsibility, I understand, and I think there's a place early on for parents to tell the child. I think sometimes we could even say it that way, is because I say so. But at some point in life, as a child grows up, hopefully they've been taught and they've got a good example from mom and daddy, but they themselves make their decisions. And it is so wrong, so harshly unkind, wrong, to blame those parents who tried so hard to bring that child up in the nurture and admonition or the discipline instruction of the Lord, that later on in life they choose not to follow that and they want to blame mom and daddy. What a terrible example of playing the blame game. Well, as we think about the family relationship, have you ever known? I realize sometimes there can be situations in the husband-wife relationship, one party is really the guilty party. So I know that. But so often is the case that when we have conflicts and difficulties and problems in that relationship, that one or the other, maybe both, want to put all the blame on the other person and the unwillingness to say, I was wrong and I was sorry. And how many divorce lawyers have heard it from both parties that it's totally her fault? No, it's totally his fault. And so that's another classic example of people who don't want to accept the personal responsibility. I know it takes two people putting forth the effort to maintain that relationship with all the stresses. But let's not blame somebody else when we are really guilty ourselves. You ever heard this one? I'm an alcoholic, but I can't help it. It's a disease. Now, I don't want to get into all that discussion. There's a whole lot of evidence on both sides, and it sometimes comes down almost to semantics. What do you call a disease? And I know the AMA has even put their stamp of approval on that terminology, but the fact is, let me just raise a question here. Is the initial choice to drink, is it a choice? That initial decision to begin drinking alcohol? No, obviously it is a choice. If it is the case, even those who argue that in favor of what they call a genetic predisposition for this, and I wouldn't say that there could not be any, but even they will acknowledge, usually they will say it's 50%. And so this would be, I think, the only example I know of a self-inflicted disease, and it certainly does not remove the responsibility from the person who chooses, even if they may have some sort of predisposition to that, to continue to engage in that activity. Well, along the same line, very similar thing, I got a thing off the internet some time ago, and I want to maybe expound on it later on, about myths, M-Y-T-H, myths, and it was the myths about homosexuality, and this was number one on their list, and that is that my sexual orientation, by which they mean my choice to live a homosexual life, is not a choice. I was made this way. And there's a host of material on both sides of this issue. Is it or is it not a choice? Some of you may remember back in the 1990s, there were three studies that were touted. One of them was done at Harvard. And I think one of the ones who participated in that study has later admitted that they rigged some of the results. They had an agenda, results they wanted to get. But At that time, it was put forth that, well, we have evidence here that there's a hereditary component here, that a person is predisposed and they studied twins and so forth and so on. Well, those studies have been examined, and they're really not very rigorously done, but there have been many such studies since then that have indicated that's just not the case. And so I ask you another question here, and that is, does God create anyone with a compelling inclination which he cannot control and then label that as sinful and condemn him for it? Much more could be said on that subject, but I think this is another example of really giving the blame to somebody else. Well, there's so many examples of how people blame other people, but let's just think about it, and we've already kind of touched on it already, but the ways in which people often are inclined to blame God, to put the blame on God of all people. How many times have you talked to someone who doesn't believe in God and says, let me ask you, explain this to me. How did evil come to be in the world? Here you posit, you say you believe in a God, a creator, who is all-powerful, but is holy and righteous and good, and yet evil abounds. How do you account for its presence? And so what they're really implying is, first of all, they don't believe it. They don't believe there is a God, but those of you who do believe in a God, you're in a position here that you're blaming the creator for this. Well, that's the classic argument. Of course, it just ignores the fact that God has chosen to create man with a free moral agency, as we call it, the ability to choose. Really, everything we're talking about tonight goes back to that, that we are responsible for the choices that God allows us to make. I don't know that I can fully explain the origin of Satan, but I think there's clearly evidence here that he was a created being who rebelled against God, implying that he also had a choice. But the fact is that we cannot blame God for the presence of evil and wicked in the world. In fact, God sees it, and he will ultimately deal with it and punish it. How many times have you heard somebody, maybe you yourself have been inclined sometimes to feel this way, but I've heard it many times. Some tragedy occurs, a baby dies, somebody has a car wreck, make it whatever you want. And someone will be quick to say, why did God do this to me? Or maybe sometimes they'll sort of temper that a little bit and they'll say, why did God allow this to happen to me? You see the implication of that? What they're implying is that God causes everything to happen. And that somehow maybe it's capricious, maybe it's punishment for evil, as in the case of Job and his friends. But still, it just seems like God, why did God do this? And they will blame God immediately for it. God gets blamed for a lot of bad things that happen. Sometimes bad things that other people do. Sometimes bad things that happen, as we sometimes call them, acts of nature. But let's go to what we're thinking about. Think of Job's example. Do you remember as the story begins? This is even before Job has the terrible affliction in his body. But there in chapter 1, he's introduced to us not only as a holy, godly, righteous man who feared God, but also a man of some means. He was a wealthy man. He had 10 children, 7 sons and 3 daughters. He had donkeys and oxen and sheep and camels and all of these things. And God allowed Satan to have the right to put him to the test. And so the reports begin to come into Job. First of all, his oxen and his donkeys had been stolen by the Sabaeans, and it even killed the attending servants. And then comes a report that lightning had struck, fire from heaven, I'll call that lightning, but struck and burned up his sheep and the servant. And then a report that the Chaldeans had brought about a raid and captured all his camels. Well, that's bad enough. But then he gets the word there had been a windstorm. All 10 of his children were assembled in their older brother's house, and the house collapsed and killed all 10 of his children. Later on, you remember Job's wife urged him to curse God and die. But here's the character of Job, I think, seen there at the end of chapter 1. In chapter 1, verse 22, after recording all the things we've just looked at, the text says, through all of this, Job did not sin, nor did he blame God. What he said right before that is, blessed be the name of the Lord. And so Job could see, and his friends could not, that it was a fallacy to say that God did all of that, and that it was punishment for something wrong in Job's life. So let's never be guilty of attributing to God something that he's not necessarily responsible for. And so the sad result of that very often is that a person will become bitter, and they'll sometimes even go on to say, if that's the God that exists, then I don't want to serve and worship him. All based upon a faulty assumption that God is responsible. Sometimes I think people are blaming God without realizing it when they say that it's just not possible to understand the Bible alike. A number of years ago, I heard a preacher say, when somebody asked me, if somebody asked me, can we all understand the Bible alike? I respond by saying, let's take the word alike out of there. And just say, can we understand the Bible? If we understand it, then we will understand it alike. But the fact is, there are obviously, the world abounds with people who see different passages of Scripture in different ways and reach different conclusions, teach other doctrines. And very often, sometimes maybe indirectly saying it, but implying that God is responsible for that. We've talked about that before and pointed out that really that says one of two things is true. Either God wanted to reveal himself in his word in a way that we could understand it, he just couldn't do it. Or he could do it and chose not to. Gave it to us in a way that is beyond our comprehension, and then will hold us accountable for how we live according to it. And I don't believe that's the God of the Bible at all. Well, let's think about some things maybe to get a little closer to home to us, the temptation sometimes that we face. Sometimes this is not spoken so much as acted out, but it amounts, I think, to blaming God. Here's someone who has been mistreated by someone else. Maybe it's even a brother or sister in Christ. They've done them wrong. There's no question about that. And because of that, then they become unfaithful. They begin to not assemble with the saints. And maybe even they go into a worldly living in their life. And it all they will tell you was precipitated by the way that person treated me. You see what that really is, if you follow that thought through, the actions are implying that I'm blaming God for that. Because after all, whose relationship has been impaired? My relationship with God and my service to Him. Now, you probably thought about it this way, but isn't it true that this would be very much like a man who's on the job and his boss or one of his co-workers mistreats him, and that happens a lot, but he goes home in his fury and frustration and he begins to mistreat his wife or his children. And you say, that doesn't make any sense. That's not right. Well, of course it's not. But here's a person who says, here's this person, maybe it's a preacher, maybe it's an elder, whoever it might be, who has let me down, disappointed me, or mistreated me, and so for that reason, I'm going to quit faithfully serving and worshiping God. Makes no sense, and it is implied at least. Blaming God for that. Is God responsible when we fail to live up to what we ought to be? Of course not. And another way of sort of taking that same thought and twisting it, how many times do we hear people talk about, well, you know, they're hypocrites in the church? And it may be in some congregations. I don't think we have a problem with that here. We may have some that we don't know about, but I do know that there are places in which there are a number of people who are obviously, it becomes evident after a while that they're just